Welcome to the Creative Homeschool Podcast. In this podcast, I'm coming at you to deliver you a weekly dash of creativity to make your homeschool exciting for your kids, but for you too. We're going to explore all of the different ways to creatively homeschool: games, field trips, unit studies, writing activities, kid businesses, art, and more. I'm your host, Julie Soule, longtime homeschool mom, shenanigan enthusiast, espresso drinker, and founder and co-owner of Soul Sparklets Art. I've helped thousands add creativity and joy to their homeschool, and I'm ready to help you too. Ready to get started? Let's go.
Welcome to the Creative Homeschool Podcast. Today, I am thrilled to welcome the incredible Paula Wong. Paula is a homeschool mom to three girls, ages 5 through 10. And loves teaching her kids through something fun, something exciting, and that's games. In particular, we're talking board and card games, where she effortlessly matches games with what her kids are learning, as well as just using them for fun. But in that fun, these kids are constantly learning, and that's what we're going to chat about today. A huge welcome to you, Paula. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
So when parents first purchase games, I think that they often purchase the games from their own childhood. Candyland, Chutes and Ladders, Monopoly, Uno, the game of life. And you recommend parents donate those games right away and level up.
They're the worst. I mean, have you actually played Candyland or Sorry ever in the past 10 years? They're really boring and they're awful, in my opinion. It's the We call them the roll and move games, or I guess in Candyland, like you pick a card and you move. And I have a rule with my family. I said, here's the deal. I do not play games where you can take my turn for me. So if there is literally no decision making on my part in a game, then it is not a game that I am interested in playing. So if I'm just going to roll a dice and move, well, you could just do that game and pretend you're playing with me and take all my turns. And I'm going to sit and drink a cup of coffee and read a book. So like, I want to play games where on your turn, you're doing something and on my turn, I'm doing something else. And I don't care if you are 3 years old or 13 years old. There are plenty of opportunities for those kinds of games that are, I think, so much more engaging. And so for a 3 year old, you know, you're going to lean towards a cooperative game where the decisions we make, we're working together to accomplish a goal. And then for a 13-year-old, we're going to be playing a competitive game and you're going to have your strategy and I'm going to have my strategy and we're going to try and, you know, head to head, see who can win. But I don't think that there's really a place anymore for these roll and move games because we've evolved. There are an infinite number of better games these days. So I think that if you're wanting to play games with your kids, and especially if you're wanting it to have any sort of educational aspect, those can go. There's plenty of better options for you.
So a lot of people really aren't familiar that the board game industry has kind of had a little bit of a reboot within the last 20 to 30 years or so. And a lot of these games originally came over from Europe and now it's pretty mainstream here. Yeah. So if someone were to go out and they're looking and they're nervously clutching their Candyland and they're, you know, right now, and they go on Amazon or Target and they're a little overwhelmed with all the new games that are out there and they're not quite sure. Do you have three that you could recommend? And let's not say 3 years old, because that gets into a different type of game playing where kids are really just learning how to actually move their game piece. But let's look at that nice sweet spot, anywhere from 8 to 13. What three games do you think that people could find fairly easily, that could be a nice entry level, whether or not they're the best option on the market? Let's just think entry level.
Totally. Totally. I would say, going back to those little kids, I agree. 3 year olds is hard, but I think there are a lot. I think when we think Candyland, Sorry, et cetera, we are thinking about that 5 year old niche and we kind of think, well, that's just all they have for those kids. And I think even if you back up to those, for people who don't know about Peaceable Kingdom games, those are amazing. So if you want a game that you can play with your 3, 4, 5, 6 year old that is actually engaging and is fun and is cooperative, P.S. cooperative is key with those ages. Those ages do not like to lose, right? They get really upset when they lose. And so cooperative games means everybody works together for a common goal. And that means that your kid is less likely to lose because you're there to help.
So you're advocating for not playing Sorry with your 4 year old.
Yes, I am solidly advocating for that. So Peaceful Kingdom Games and Outfoxed, which is a game right game. Those are heavy hitting winners across the board. They're so great. And the other thing, I think with little kids, people are always like, well, what if I lose pieces, right? Kids lose pieces. Well, Peaceable Kingdom will replace your pieces for free.
I have had that happen also. So Peaceable Kingdom is a huge favorite here. And yeah. There's some really young oriented games, yeah. But they yeah. also, there's a couple out there that are challenging. We have the Mole Rats in Space.
Mole Rats in Space. Here's looking at
I'm so angry that I cannot win this. I'm a grown adult. Why am I struggling?
It's really hard. So I would say, you know, when you're thinking about replacing Candyland or Sorry, you're probably thinking about the younger set. Now, as your kids get older, my 8-year-old will play Peaceable Kingdom games with her younger sister. But that's not what she's going to reach for, because those games are intended for a younger audience. So as you get into that 8 to 13-year-old set, there are about a bajillion options. And honestly, I don't know that I could recommend go to Target and look at their board games, because like you're saying, that is so overwhelming now. It used to be there would be just a few, but now it's super overwhelming. So names that I would look for in probably Amazon or just Target.com, so you're not overwhelmed by the sheer number of options, would be things like King Domino. So King Domino, it's a tile laying game. It's got really simple rules in terms of getting it to the table. My 5-year-old can play, but is she going to win? No. And she knows that. She's okay with that. She's there to just have fun, but it is enjoyable for adults. And I think that's really hard to find those games that you can play with an 8-year-old that as an adult, you're not like, I want to stab myself in the eyes. And so King Domino, Splendor fits in that. We love Splendor. My cards are grimy and falling apart. Like,
it's a favorite here too. Good. For those of you who have not played, the gem tokens just make a really satisfying clink when they hit. They're solid. These pieces of the games nowadays, not Candyland, but they're good quality too. They're often wooden. They're made to last. So gone are the days of games where the pieces are going to get ripped and fall apart.
So I don't know how many of your listeners know about Board Game Geek, but it's a place where you can go and read about games. You can kind of get an idea of what the rules are, what the mechanics are, what ages would be best, how difficult it is. And if you produce a board game with inferior components, you get reamed on that site. Nowadays, people really care about how it feels in your hands. How do those cards feel? Do they have a linen finish? You're talking about that satisfying clink of the things. I have bad news though about Splendor for you. So the new version of Splendor, they've replaced the discs is what I've heard. And I've heard it doesn't have that nice clink anymore.
Okay. So, the only reason I know about this clink so much is because I had a friend who, she wasn't super excited about playing that game, but we do both love sparkly things. And when she was playing with the token, she was just pretty happy about that.
Clink is good, but I heard they might go change it because people were really disappointed that they had changed that. But Splendor, the rules are pretty easy. So I would say if my mom can play it, then anyone can play it. That's kind of one of my rules. My mom is old school on board games. She would be happy to play Candyland because that's familiar to her. The rules are very simple. So if I'm going to teach her a game to play with my kids and the family, it has to be so simple. And Splendor, she was like, oh, I like that.
It's again. It is definitely easy to go. And even my 8-year-old loves Splendor and wins.
Right. So, the adults love it too. That's the interesting thing. They are creating these games where I can play with my kids and I will probably play a little easier. And I can play with my husband and I will viciously fight for everything that I can get. You know what I mean? So I think King Domino is a really fun one. Splendor is a really fun one. Azul is really fun. They've come up with some expansions for that that are amazing as well. The basic one is by far the easiest in terms of learning. And I think you were going to talk about rules at some point, but I would say for any of these games, the rules are on YouTube. There is almost no reason to read a rule book anymore. I know that for so many of my friends, they're like, I don't want to buy the game because then I have to learn the rules. Paula, will you just buy the game and teach me the rules? Like, you guys, it's on YouTube. You don't have to sit there and read through the rule book anymore. They will show you, they will do a playthrough where they show you how they're playing.
It's important to note that when we were younger, the rules for a game were printed on the box often.
Yes.
Or just on a booklet. And I think I learned at some point that in Sorry, I was playing with a friend of mine. We never knew that when you're playing and it's adults that you actually get to choose what card to play.
Oh, really?
Paul is also surprised. But because we all just grew up playing these very, very simple games with these simple right. rules, and the rule books with the games now are not so simple. So yeah. don't let that stop you from trying some of these games, because the video, the way that so many of them have taken this to video where you can watch and see exactly what's happening if something feels confusing, it's just amazing.
It's so good. And then they also, for the games where the rule, I mean, the games I've mentioned, King Domino, Splendor, as well, they're relatively simple, but they even have forums where you can go and ask questions. Like, I have a rule question. What do you do in this situation? And people will respond. Like, the publisher or the creator, the designer will get on there and be like, oh, let me explain to you. So like, that doesn't happen often with these kind of intro games. But as you get more and more difficult, sometimes you'll come up with a scenario where like, I didn't know, but there are answers out there. There are YouTube videos out there. The rules piece of this for these types of games should not stop you. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I would say those would be some of my favorite. If you're looking for a cooperative game, Forbidden Island is always a great one.
That one. That one is great too.
It's a great one. You know, the kids can play it with you and you can kind of guide the strategy. Trying not to be an alpha. That's a big thing on cooperative games. You have this one alpha character who wants to just boss everybody around and tell them what to do on their moves. But if you can avoid as the parent not being the alpha and making sure each person has the ability to create their own decisions on their term, that's a fantastic one. Ticket to Ride. I don't know anybody who does not know what Ticket to Ride is, but it's a train game. There's about 55 different versions of Ticket to Ride. Those are fun. They're pretty easy to get to the table. They're a little longer if you do the full games, but they've come up with some shortened Ticket to Ride London or Ticket to Ride San Francisco or New York, where it's like a shorter version of the game, which for my kids works better. They're like, I'm good for about 30 minutes max. So they love that. But as you get older and your attention span gets longer, other Ticket to Ride games get a lot more interesting. So there are so many great ones for that age set of the 8 to 13. And then you start to get into the really more interesting ones as you hit that upper end, like Wingspan. Wingspan is super well known as being a fabulous board game for that older set. And there's a million expansions for that too. And so it's the rules start to get a little bit more and the strategy gets to be a little bit more, but they're just aesthetically so pleasing. Who doesn't love a game about birds? There's like a million of them. I think there are so many great games. And no matter if you're trying to be somebody who says, okay, well, I'm learning about such and such in school. If I'm going to play a game with my kid, it's got to like cross off a box. Trust me, there is a game to cross off almost any box, which is pretty crazy.
You know, you just mentioned something that I didn't think to touch on, but I want to back up a little bit because you mentioned expansions and it occurred to me that people who are not familiar with games might not understand what an expansion is. And, you don't exactly get an expansion to Candyland.
Right. So it's a sequel. You played a game, you love it. And at a certain point, you've played it to death and you might not be interested in playing that anymore because you've tried different strategies or whatever. This really happens more as you get to those kind of upper level games. But even King Domino, which is a basic game, or Splendor and Azul, I guess, I mean, they all have expansions too. So the idea of, okay, I've done this game. I've played it a lot. These games do tend to be highly addictive. I find when we get them, it's like, let's do it again. But then the welcome starts to wear out after a little bit. And so the designers will create something that you can buy, that you can play with that game, that adds to it, that changes the rules. And so now all of a sudden, the things that you were choosing to do on your turns before that were great might be less helpful now. So they're really fun. Or sometimes it's a rework of the game. So like Azul, you don't play with an expansion. You just buy a different version of Azul, but the new versions have more strategic elements to them. And so I might play Azul with my five-year-old, but I'm not going to play Azul Summer Pavilion with my five-year-old because it's a little bit more than she's really ready for. It just, there are different versions of the same game. It's a way to make more money off the same idea. It's like a sequel.
Yeah, it's really interesting because you were talking about King Domino, So they came out with a sequel, an expansion, which is Queen Domino.
Right. Well,
some of these expansions can be played completely on their own. Yeah. And then some of them you link together.
Yes.
So make note that when you do go out, to make sure that you find something that doesn't say this requires the original game to play. Make sure it says it's a standalone.
Right. King Domino has a expansion, which is the Giants. I don't know if you've played that one.
No, not yet.
It makes it so much more fun. I much prefer King Domino with the Giants, which is really fun. And then, like you said, Queen Domino, you can play it with or on its own. And then they just came out with another one, Origins, which you can play on its own. So they have all these kind of different ones that you can do. But you're right. A lot of expansions, like take Settlers of Catan, right? Like, I feel like a lot of people have heard of Settlers of Catan. That's the base game. And then there's a ton of different expansions, but you need the base game, as you're saying, to play, you know, or Dominion is another one, which has a million expansions. It's a card game, a deck building game. You need the base game and then you can buy the expansions. So also, this is something people fall into. They're like, okay, I've decided I like games. I'm going to buy the games and I know they're rated well. So I'm going to buy all the expansions too while I'm at it. And let me tell you, don't do that, because just because somebody likes a game doesn't mean you're going to like the game.
Okay? So we were talking about that before I hit record, about how you and your kids both, you're going to have games that your kids love that you might have accidentally donated or purposefully donated.
Yes.
And regret it, because even though you don't find it to be a great game, your kids love it.
Right.
And vice versa. You're going to get a game that you might do with your kids and your kids just have no interest in ever playing this.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I found that I was buying Draftosaurus, which is like a silly drafting game where you pass dinosaurs around. And I had heard nothing but great things about this game. And so I was like, okay, well, the expansions are hard to find. So if I can get that, I'm going to get Draftosaurus and the expansion so I can do it all. And I'm so glad that that never actually happened. I just got Draftosaurus. Draftosaurus as a base game, it's fine. It's not my favorite game. I can see why people love it. It's not my favorite game. I'm really glad I didn't buy the expansions for it. Do my kids love playing it? Absolutely. Does it hit the table? For sure. But I don't love it enough to want to own a bunch of expansions for this game. Because, and you and I talked about this earlier, storage becomes a thing too. And so just because I have a game, I need to be able to justify its existence.
You know what? Let's talk. Let's just go. I was going to talk about storage at the end, but let's go there. So I heard you have a shelf of shame.
I have a lot of shelves, Julie. I have a lot. So my kid was like cataloging my games, and I have like over 300 board games.
That was impressive.
So I joined a board game group on Facebook and I was like, wow, I pretty much have nothing. You're right. I bow to you, owner of 700 games, but I do have a lot of games and storage has persistently been a problem, because where do you put it? The problem is that I also play games with a wide variety of people and not everybody is doing this, but I need games that appeal to my 5-year-old. I need games that appeal to my 10-year-old. I want games that I can play quickly with my mom friends when we're doing a pod group hangout homeschool thing and there's a little extra time at the end. But I want deeper strategic games to play with my husband. I want party games to play with the neighbors, because they are not going to play. They're not even going to play King Domino and Azul. They're old school. They're not doing it. But they might play Wits and Wagers or Blank Slate, which are really fun kind of party group games. So I have a section of those. And then I have what we call the Shelf of Shame, which is all the games that I've bought because I've heard they're so good. And then they're just sitting there, just waiting. They look good. They look really good on my shelf.
Now, you had something that you did during the holiday season for some of these games that you hadn't played.
Yes. Okay. So everybody loves to open presents, right? Most people do. And so what we started doing was taking games that were new and wrapping them. And then taking some other games that we wanted to play and wrapping them that we've already played a bunch of times. And so we ended up with this pile of like 15 games that were just intermixed, right? And everybody took some games and wrapped them. So like you couldn't really remember exactly who had which games and what had been wrapped. And then what we would do is we'd have Alexa pick a random number between one and whatever. And whatever number she picked, that's the game we played. We opened it and it's like Christmas every time you unwrap a game. It was so fun. And then sometimes you'd be like, oh, literally one of them was King Domino. And I was like, I don't know what's up there right now, right? And that was the rule. Whatever you unwrapped, you had to play. So if it's a new game, you had to learn the rules. And I would tell the kids, I'm going to learn these rules later today and we'll play this later. But if it was a game you'd already played, even if it wasn't your favorite, that was the game somebody had chosen. That's what we were going to play. We're going to be good sports about it. And so it was fabulously successful. It was really fun.
Well, you answered my follow-up question because I thought that all the games that you had wrapped were all ones that you hadn't played completely and that the kids didn't know about that were just kind of sitting there.
Yeah, there are some of those. For sure, there are a lot of new games wrapped up in there. And then I would say, and this is kind of an important thing, when you get a game, don't learn the rules in front of your kids. Like, yay, we got this game. Let's open it up and learn all these rules right now. No kid wants to sit there and watch you read the rules and fumble through. That's not really fun at all. Set it aside when you have a game that you're learning the rules to. They can open it. Every kid loves to open a game. It's fun to open it. It's fun to pop. But unwrapping the cards, you'll ever like that like tactile experience of it. But no one wants to sit there and watch you figure out all these rules. So what we'll do is we'll open it. Everybody helps. We put it back in the box. And I go, okay, I'm going to go learn the rules and we'll play this tonight. And that's when I go to YouTube and I usually watch the rules and then I read the rule book again. Because now when I'm reading the rule book, it's not all Greek to me. I'm like, oh yeah, I remember them talking about that. But I'm looking for any nuances, things that I might not have noticed in the video or that they may not have mentioned.
It's funny you mentioned that because one time I went and I watched a video. I typically tend to not do the videos and I read the book.
Okay.
But I have friends who do the opposite. So I decided to watch a video and it missed something major.
Yeah, they can do that. So there are...
My husband is a rule police. So
yeah,
he found that.
Yes. So there are people that are paid to do the rules. And for those videos, they're usually very, very thorough. So my favorite, I have a board game boyfriend. My kids and I always talk about him. And he is from Watch It Played or How It's Played, Rodney. And he's amazing. He can take a game and just make it feel so approachable. And I'm talking complex games where the
rules are on YouTube. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
And so we'll link to that afterwards in the show notes for you to head over there.
If you can find someone like a site where you really feel confident that they are going to be thorough, like that can really do most of the heavy lifting for you. I just like to do a quick pass going back through and make sure I didn't miss anything. But I do that on my own time. And then if the game looks a little bit more complicated than I'm used to, then I'll ask my husband, hey, will you just do a dry run of this with me so that we can see if this is something I just want to make sure I'm understanding, right? And so then we'll do it and then we'll figure out like, then the other question is, do I like the rules as they are written? Which for the popular games, I do tend to, but sometimes you'll get this random off the shelf game that I found somewhere, like maybe Goodwill or the board game store had it and it was cheap. And I'm like, I'll try it. And I'm like, ooh, this game would be better if they, whatever. And then I'll just invent house rules and you can do that, you know. That's allowed.
The board game police does not show up at your door.
They have yet to come here, believe it or not. And so we'll kind of maybe tinker with things to make it easier for my five-year-old or less random. You know, so one game that we have that we really enjoy is Cover Your Assets. People love that game. It's a Grandpa Beck's game. It's not my favorite, but my kids want to play this game. They love this game. And they have some special cards in the Cover Your Assets game that you're lucky if you get them. Do you know what I mean? And so, and they can really change the game in terms of who's going to win or whatever. And so my husband and I decided that we're not going to shuffle those cards in. We're either going to keep them out of the game or we're going to give everybody a token that represents that card and everybody can turn in their token once per game. So everybody got the card. You can strategically decide when you want to use that card because it feels unfair if somebody's getting all the good cards. You know what I mean?
So there are some cards out there that are just loaded so heavily.
So heavily. Yeah. So you can change it. You can make little adjustments, remove a card from the game, decide that something's not worth as many points as someone else said.
Making one of your kids cry. That game just, you know.
Yeah. It doesn't need to be there.
Somewhere.
It doesn't need to happen. So, yeah. And the thing is, as you get into games and you play more and more and you get exposed to more of them, like, there are so many really, 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 really fun games out there. And I wish I had my girlfriends and I, we try and write, okay, kids, can you wrap up the school stuff real quick? Because the adults want to go play games.
Yeah.
Have stashes of just really fun games that we want to play. And there's so many good ones. If you're just willing to take the time to watch that YouTube video and figure out the rules, there's so many good ones. There really are.
So it's really important to know that Paula just said that games aren't just things that you're playing with your kids anymore.
Mm-mm. Nope.
I know that I get together with a couple of friends of ours who come over and we play games as adults and the kids come over or not, depending. But they are really great for those homeschool get-togethers. And if any of you have a situation where you have some kind of partnership, co-op, any kind of homeschool group, or just getting together with friends, bringing a game or two for the kids
and for bringing
one for the adults is a really, really great idea and way to kind of get the conversation flowing, keep things light and fun. Or maybe to get out all that angst that you as a homeschool parent have, you know.
I was going to mention in terms of those games. So, you know, Taboo, right? That's an old classic. And then there's a million versions of these kind of holler it out type games, right? Given a clue to a thing. We will play those with our pod group with the older kids at lunch. And we don't take scores. No one's winning. No one's losing. It's an activity that we do while the kids are eating, and it's really fun. It takes a little pressure off when you're not worried about trying to win.
That's got to be good for introverts, helping them kind of bust out of that cage to do things like that too.
Yeah, and the adults are all up in it too. Like, oh, I know. Oh my gosh, let the kids try too. But there are really great party games where we don't always play it by the rules. We're just doing it as a fun little activity to fill time. You can do that too. You don't always have to play a game with the board and the score sheet. Feel free to just play it for fun.
So if there's someone listening right now and they're thinking, I just did a unit study on X.
Right.
On a specific topic. You mentioned that it's very easy to find. And I agree. It's been very rare for me not to have found a game that goes with that purpose. But where would you recommend they go to do a little bit of research and find the best ideas for where to start for someone who's very new?
Okay. So a couple options. One, I have literally just Googled, I need kids board games about weather. P.S. There's not a lot of those. I found that one out. I remember when I was doing a unit and I was like, I need kids board games with units about insects. So I will start with the Google. If you're on Facebook, there's a group called Game School Academy. I had to actually leave that group for a while because
your shopping cart was up.
It's a dangerous group where they're like, have you played this one? It was really fun. I'm like, and add to cart. I was like, I need just like a month or two to not add anything to my cart. But those people are a treasure trove of ideas because they're all their homeschoolers.
Link to all of this too, everyone. Yeah. So
when you say I need a game about whatever, these people have game ideas. Now I will tell you, I have opinions about some of the games they post. I'm like, have you actually played that game? That game is terrible. So sometimes people are so desperate to have something that lines up with the unit that they sacrifice having a good game. I'm not willing to do that. I refuse to play.
Really, really good point.
And yeah, I won't.
We often do that as homeschoolers, don't we? We try to force that learning.
Yeah, right. It's like a boring art project just to say, congratulations, you checked a box. And it's like, can we check interesting boxes? I would like to do that instead. So there's a lot of them. BoardGameGeek.com is a great site. And you can literally just look up words in there too, because every game that is put in there, any sort of thematic things they will write as a key tag. And so it will search through those. Although that's harder to find kid games, right? If you're trying to find kid games, it's probably better to ask in that Facebook group or Amazon, things like that. But I have always found tons and tons of games that relate to what we're learning about. I have also found that I care way, way, way more about that than my kids do. I'm all puffing up my chest that I found this great game that matches our theme, and they don't really care. They just want to play a board game. And so I'm trying to remind myself it's okay if the game that we play doesn't relate. That doesn't mean it's not educational. It doesn't mean they're not getting anything out of it. It's
such
okay.
A good segue to what I was going to ask you next, because you mentioned, and I know you believe, as do I, that games are a really great way to get math in.
Yeah.
Could you explain a little bit of what you mean by that?
Sure. So we have silly educational games in my house. We have like Peaceful Kingdom has sums in space or some swamp, right? Election Night is a really great one for geography and math. We have these outnumbered, by the way. If you want a really fun math game, Outnumbered is so fun. It's a great game. And so those are like really explicitly mathematical games. But there are plenty of games that we play that are not explicitly mathematical games, but my kids are in charge of tallying their own scores, which becomes for little kids math. You're not going to find fractions in our scorekeeping, but you're going to find for my 8-year-old, when I hand her the score sheet for Point Salad or King Domino or Bamuntu or any of these other games that we play, and I say, okay, add up all your numbers. That's a lot for her. Even for my 5-year-old, I don't have her add her whole score. But one of her favorite games is this game called Butterfly, which is a Ravensburger game. It is like a weird, sleepy hit. Like I've never heard of anybody talking about it. My kid will play that game every day. It's a great game. I will play it with adults. And so there's a lot of add up all the points you got for this and then add up all the points you got for this. And so my 5-year-old, I'm like, no, you add that up. You figure it out. Oh, you had to double all of your answers because you got a doubling thing. Okay, well, let's figure it out. Let's double that. So there's so much that happens. And then some of it is not always just math, like literally I added and subtracted, but some of it is that strategic thinking, which I think that we don't understand the benefit of that. But when you think about word problems or you think about, especially as you get higher up in math, the problems are not always so straightforward and you need a strategic way to get to the answer. And you don't have a ton of practice with that. It can be really frustrating. But if you've played a lot of board games where you've had to strategically figure out how you're going to get to the end result, that feels more like a game. It feels more like you're manipulating the information to get to what you want, which is what you've been doing as a game, right? But if you've never done it before, it can just be frustrating. So there's value even when there are no numbers attached to it.
Yeah. I think a lot of people forget that kind of logic.
Yeah.
Part of the math world.
Yeah. It really is. And, you know, my kids are also learning to lose well. I know we had talked about this, but do you let your kids win or do you whatever?
That is a heated topic. So what is your thought on that? Do you let your kids win?
I've heard so many different things on this. So I would say my oldest, if we play a game for the first time and she loses, she's not really excited about playing that game again. I will often throw that first game her way and I will try and get my score close, but not quite there. She feels like she triumphed. She's ready to play again. The next game, I will probably win or I'll keep it really close type thing. As a general rule, once we've established that a game is something that we enjoy playing, one thing that I might do is ask my kids, how hard do you want me to play? Do you want me to play my hardest? Do you want me to play kind of easy on you? And that allows them to have some control over the experience. So if I'm going to play my hardest, I'm going to sit there and really think about every turn. If I'm playing easier, I'm just going to kind of do something and it might work out or it might not work out. You know, and we talk a lot about, well, I won that game, but there was a lot of luck to it. Or if the scores are close, like we're within a couple points, I'm like, wow, that's crazy. I technically won, but I would call that a tie. We were basically the same. They love to hear that. Do I need to win? I'm an adult. It's okay. I can let that go. But I also want them to learn to lose well. So we'll even be playing a game and I'll be like, I'm going to win this game. And they're like, no, I'm going to win. I'm like, no, I'm going to win. And sometimes I win and sometimes I don't. So, you know, I think the luck games, obviously, that anybody can win those. And we don't have a lot of those because that bugs me. And then the strategic ones, you know, if I feel like my kid's making really great strategic choices, then I'll make sure they get rewarded for that. I won't play as hard.
I think I do a very similar thing. And one of the benefits that I found when I'm playing that way is sometimes as an adult, I get to form a new strategy.
Yes.
As I play around a little bit more because I'm not playing with adult friends who I really want to crush. Sorry, everyone. Right. I am a competitive board gamer. But when you're playing with your kids and you're trying to teach them the game, you get to play around a little bit with your own strategy because you're trying things that you might not have tried before. So it's not always a bad thing to do that. Really get to play around. So
yeah. And you know, if your kid is a sore loser, just stick with cooperative games. There's so many good ones out there. And start with that and lose some of those cooperative games so you can be a good example of like, oh man, we lost, but it was fun trying. We'll try again.
Like the Mole Rats in Space.
Exactly.
Is a great one. And I don't know how you feel about this one, but Ghost Fighting Treasure Hunters.
Love it.
It's a cooperative game that you can lose very easily at. So if you're looking for a game where you can kind of band together, so they're not losing against you, but they're losing against the game.
Have you played Zombie Kids Evolution?
I have not.
Okay, so this is another type of game, which is a legacy game. So a legacy game is a game that you can play exactly once. And once you have run through the course of the game, you just throw it right in the trash because you are done with it. But, and that sounds like, I mean, I can just see people going, why the heck would you spend money on a game that you're only going to play once? Well, you play it once, but you play it over a series of rounds. And with each round, more and more information is added or more difficulties happen. So with the initial game of Zombie Kids, it's you're just trying to keep these zombies from getting into this thing.
I mean, what zombies do.
And I have a friend who's like, well, we don't play zombie games. And I'm like, oh my gosh, these are like the cutest zombies and it's really not a zombie game. But then what happens is every time you play a game, my kids love this, by the way, you get to take a picture of a brain sticker and you put it on this little tracker sheet. And then every time you play a game and you have reached some sort of a goal, like you played this game and never once were you attacked by a zombie. You somehow managed to evade them the whole time. Then you get to put a metal sticker on your thing. And then every 5 stickers that get placed, you get to open an envelope. And in that envelope, now you have super zombies or superheroes or super whatevers that come out in each envelope, right? And so each time an envelope is revealed, something more enticing happens. And now you want to play again because A, you want to try out this new cool thing that just happened. And B, you want to get more stickers on that page so that you can open the next envelope. It's like super addictive. It's awesome. And those games are really fun too because they're cooperative. There's zombie kids and zombie teens. And even if you have teens, start with zombie kids because it's easier. And you're going to lose. Does that make sense? The rules are put a sticker on whether you win or you lose. You get a sticker either way.
I feel like if you're playing a zombie game, it seems natural that you lose the first.
You're going to lose. But the nice thing about the zombie, if you have kids that are older that are not really interested in some of the younger cooperative games, like the Peaceful Kingdom games, but you wanted to play cooperative games, then that one's great because, you know, sometimes you lose in the first like 4 turns and then you're like, well, lost that game. Put a sticker on, right? You still get a sticker. Put a sticker on, set it up again. Let's do it again. So those are really, really fun too, because there's that added benefit of unlocking a thing. So I think Stuffed Fables does the same. And there's a game called The Initiative, which does the same. You play them one time, but that one time is played over like 12 rounds. So you're going to get your money's worth. But that's another interesting kind of game for people who are willing to settle in and try different things. That's really fun. And they tend to be cooperative.
I love that. Now, before I get to the rapid fire.
Okay.
I want to know, what are your top 5 favorites for you to play as an adult?
Okay.
And what are your 5 favorites that you're playing with your family right now?
Okay. Well, I can't answer that question.
You don't get to 5, if it's 4 or 6 or, you know.
Oh, no, that's fine. Let me say what I'm playing right now. Okay. Because I'm not sure I could answer
favorites
overall time. Or I have too many. So games that we're playing right now and we're loving with adults. Long Shot is really fun. It's a game where you're betting on horses. You roll a dice. The horses move around the track, but you can kind of manipulate how they move around the track. It's a push your luck game. My friends love it. We love it. It's like a lightweight game. It's really fun. Quacks of Quendling is really fun for adults. I personally love it. It's a table hog. So that phrase means that like it takes up your whole kitchen table and you're going to set it up and you're going to play it for like an hour and you're going to really want to play it again because you don't want to pack it all back in the box. But it is so, so fun. Like, I want to designate a table where I can just leave Quacks on the table because it's so fun to play. My kids love it. Adults love it. So fun. My husband and I right now are playing The Lost Ruins of Arnak, which came out in like 2021, I think. And I just unwrapped it. Okay, so this is another thing. So I have a bit of a game shopping problem. And I also have a game choosing problem. So when presented with a shelf of games that I haven't played, it's very difficult for me to choose which game to play because I look at all of them and I'm just overwhelmed. I don't know anything about the games. I don't know what I want to play. So I had my husband wrap them all in gold foil wrapping paper for me. So now when I want to play a game, I just pick a gold foil wrapping and that's what we're going to play. So this one was one that I had wrapped apparently 2 years ago until I forgot about it. And so we played it. It's really fun. The Lost Ruins of Arnak has been really fun. Games that have hit the table that have been just a huge success with my friends. Have you heard of Cascadia?
No, a lot of these are new to me. So
yeah, it's a beautiful game. It's really easy to get to the table. My friends will be like, oh, did you bring Cascadia? Because it's such an easy game. There's not a lot of setup. So it's the opposite of Quacks of Quendling, which is like this really kind of intense setup, but really worth it for the play. Cascadia is like you literally just pull it out of the box and you're pretty much ready to go. And so it's so easy to get that one to hit the table. That one has just been a really, really fun one that we really, really enjoy. And then my husband's and my new favorite, which is definitely for adults only, is Oros, which just came out on Kickstarter. And that game will break your brain into pieces. But it's really fun. We've been really enjoying it. But if you can imagine a game where you can literally change the board just by moving entire sections of the board around to try and achieve goals, it's super fun. So I'd say those are kind of my adult friend games, like kind of lighter, kind of heavier mixed in there. For my kids, we just had our floors replaced. And so we had to take all the games out of the cabinets and put them in the garage. And I told them that they cannot bring them back inside and put them in a cabinet unless we play it first. So we are trying to get some variety going, which is hard because my five-year-old, but I like this game. I just want to play this game. And I'm like, I hear you.
Over and over again,
right? Which I'm like, yeah, but there's all these other games in the garage. Can we bring those in? But Astro Trash, if you have kids and you don't mind loud, crazy games, Astro Trash is this crazy, chaotic, you roll dice, you have a pile of quote-unquote trash in front of you, and you're trying to get rid of it. And the dice roll, it's completely luck-based, determines where that trash goes. Does it go to the person on your right, the person on your left, the person across from you? And so you're just rolling as fast as you can to get rid of this trash. But of course, everybody else is rolling as fast as they can and giving you trash, and stuff is flying everywhere. And I tell you, my kids love that game. They will play that game all night long if I would let them. Butterfly, I had already mentioned, my five-year-old loves that game. It is not a five-year-old game. It is definitely meant for older people, but she gets it and it's fun. I really enjoy playing that. My kids love Cover Your Assets. That has been always just a really fun one. Grandpa Bex is a company that makes games and they tend to like Grandpa Bex games. They're all card games. They tend to be pretty quick. They tend to be good for larger groups, which we're a family of five. So a lot of games will play up to four players. And these ones play five and they tend to play fast. So Grandpa Bex does Cover Your Assets. They do Nuts About Mutts, which my kids really like. It's a kind of a more chaotic card game as well. I'm learning that as much as I want a game where I sit down and strategize, my kids want a game where you are doing wild, crazy things. So, you know, there's some give and take there. I love, if I'm playing with my kids and I got to choose the game, I would choose King Domino. I would choose Point Salad. I would choose some of these games that are designed to be family friendly, but are more interesting for me as an adult. That's
fair, because it's, homeschooling is supposed to be fun for kids, but also fun for you as the
right kid.
And making sure that I usually will get out too, and my kids will get to choose one, and I will, so that we maintain that balance. So
right,
for all these games, we'll make sure we list. So if you're driving, don't jack on the road.
Yeah, I can give you a totally list, and like there are just so many good ones. Like I could go on and on and on about all these great games, and I could go on and on and on about like terrible games too. There are a lot of terrible games. Like don't assume just because Target sells it that it is a good game. And by a terrible game, I mean like the rules are poorly written or the components don't hold up to play. Like, it's not always just an opinion. Like, there are games that have terrible rule books. No wonder you don't want to play this game. It is a horribly difficult game to play, you know? And so I think if you're new to games, stick with the ones that have consistently won prizes, like the Spiel des Jahres and things like that, like Ticket to Ride, King Domino. Those games are winning awards because they hit the table, because the rules are easy to understand, they're written well, because they're worth the time that it takes to play them, which I can't say about every game.
Yeah. And so, and some games are easier to set up and go.
And yeah.
I think with that prize, Carcassonne was one of the first that was introduced
yes.
to me in that. Yeah. And Carcassonne's one of those games now that the main one has a ton of expansions or the yes. standalones. And for yes. those of you looking for different games on geography, I know we have a Carcassonne that's just for the Amazon. We have
oh, really?
A Carcassonne that is South Seas. And so there's lots of different possibilities for getting in those fun geography and stuff while they're learning too. And for those of you worried about storage, some of these games, like Wingspan, I know is huge.
Yes.
I haven't bought it yet for no other reason than my storage is starting to get at capacity at the moment until I kind of switch. But yeah. there's a lot of games out there that are smaller. Game Right,
yes.
Forbidden Island, but Game Right has a lot of games out there like Sushi Go. Yes. One of our favorites that hits the table a lot right now with my adult friends and kids both is called Happy City.
Yep.
Everybody loves that. It's small. It's compact, so and you could take it anywhere,
right?
So there's right. games that are they come in smaller packages, but Game Right's another really good one, like Peaceable Kingdom. Yep. That you can really yep. be assured that just about anything that you get from them is going to be a hit.
And I was going to say the same. So if you have an older kid, so it can always be hard to find like older kid games that feel like they actually have any educational value anymore, quote unquote. The Genius Games. So Genius Games was designed as a company. They were like, look, there are science games and there are fun games. Could we possibly make a fun science game? And my kid is just getting to the age where she can do, they've done Ecosystem, which a lot of younger kids have played, but like she's just getting to the point where she can play the middle school games. And she took a chemistry class and we played their periodic game. And I had a friend who was begging to play that game, even though she wasn't taking chemistry. So Genius Games so
they,
are
they definitely great. Means they hit the mark.
Right. They did a great job. And then Underdog Games, which does Trekking the World, Trekking the National Parks. They just came out with Her Story, which is a new one. They are also trying Trekking Through History. That's super fun. They're trying to hit that mark too, but on the like geography history side of things, of saying, look, let's make it actually fun. So like if I had to choose between playing Ticket to Ride and Trekking Through the National Parks, I would pick Trekking Through the National Parks. I think it's in a way actually more fun, which is crazy because Ticket to Ride is a classic. But I love some of the things they did there that I'm like, oh, I love what you did here. Trekking Through History is ironically a game I bought to play with my kids and I play it with my adult friends because it's so fun. I think there are like more and more publishers are starting to realize that there is a demand for games that are not just silly, that they have some content to them that is meaty, but is still fun. And I think they're really getting it. They're making it happen right now.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? It is time for our rapid fire. Are you ready?
I've heard about this.
Okay. Favorite game from childhood?
Oh, God. Quarto. It's the only one I saved. Have you ever heard of Quarto?
I haven't.
It's Quarto. My mom says, looking back, she's like, I should have realized then that you loved games because that was a weird game that I, like she bought randomly and I loved it. And it's like tic-tac-toe, but every piece has different characteristics, like they're tall or they're short, they're light or they're dark, they're circular or they're round, they're either flat on top or have a divot in them. And you're just trying to get four in a row of a characteristic. So like, I want four talls, but I don't care about the color. I want four rounds, but I don't care about the height. And it's a really interesting game. And I have the original one from my childhood and it's old, but it's awesome. It's still a good game.
Awesome. What Monopoly token did you always choose?
Hated Monopoly. A shoe? I think I've played it like a couple times. It's too long.
Sparkly dice or plain dice?
plain only because I'm practical. And oftentimes the sparkly ones, you can't read the numbers well.
Favorite homeschool snack?
Homeschool snack, tangerines.
Coffee or tea?
Tea.
Favorite field trip you've ever taken as a homeschooler?
Ooh, gosh. The Monterey Bay Aquarium that we have is pretty fantastic.
Early bird or night owl?
Night.
Least favorite game ever?
Ooh, that's hard. Somewhere between Monopoly and Candyland. Sorry. All of those. Life. I mean, all of those ones where you just roll and move from childhood are terrible. Terrible. Although, you know, when I was a kid, I liked Life and War and Uno and all those. And my kids will still play games like that where they're like completely brainless. So I think that they appeal to kids somewhere, but I can't imagine now playing Candyland, honestly.
Favorite cartoon from childhood?
Ooh, cartoon from childhood. I think it was Jem. Jem was a cartoon. Do you remember that one?
I do remember Jem.
Yeah. I really dug that for a while. I really wanted to be her with my sparkly earrings.
Videos. And one of my closest friends in elementary school always had to rush home so that she would not miss it. So
yeah, I mean, Jem was important. You could live around that one.
I have one more question for you.
Go for it.
How do you feel about glitter?
I don't mind it, actually. I don't mind it. I know a lot of people do. It doesn't bother me. It's whatever.
Well, that is it. So I want to thank you for coming on today. I know we talked about a lot of things, and I know a lot of our listeners right now are thinking, oh my gosh, they name dropped way too many games. We will make sure, please check the show notes for those. We will get those in there along with links to Paula's favorite YouTube genius who goes over the rules of games and to Game Geek and to some of those others that we talked about today. So you have them in one place. So make sure you check the show notes. And Paula, I cannot thank you enough for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. That was really fun. I could talk about games all day long.
So we might have her back if everyone has a specific maybe genre and we can dive deeper into that at a later date if you're game for that.
Oh,
totally intended. So,
wow.
Thanks, Paula. I appreciate you being here. Okay, everyone. Until next time.